This week, we are doing groups slash societies that we find interesting slash creepy. Yes?
Cults. Mine's technically a cult. Kind of.
Mine's a group. And they're not really... Okay, so I'm doing the White Rose Resistance Group.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of them?
Nope.
Okay. So it all takes place during World War II.
Okay.
I guess just get into it. Mine are kind of like, mine's a feel-good episode. Mine's not a scary, creepy episode.
Yeah, I don't, mine's not creepy either.
I've heard of yours. I saw your sources.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Robert Scholl was born on April 13th, 1891. During World War I, he met his wife, Magdalena, when they were working in the same hospital.
I like that name.
Yeah, it's very pretty. It's cute. They married shortly after meeting and moved to Fürstenberg, later Ulm, Germany. They were passionate Nazi critics before, during, and after the Nazi regime, and Robert was actually sent to prison twice for his criticism.
Wow.
Yeah. So Robert and Magdalena had 6 children, and I'm just going to apologize before I even start. It is Eing, Hans, Elizabeth, that's easy, Sophie, Werner, and Tilde. They're from Germany, so they're German names.
Yeah.
But now we're going to focus on Hans and Sophie. So Hans was born on September 22nd, 1918, and he was the second oldest Scholl child. When he was 15 years old, he went against the beliefs of his father and his mother and became an enthusiastic member of the Hitler Youth.
Oh, good. With enthusiasm.
Yep. He quickly moved up the ranks and held the position of Duchess Jungvolk. That's incorrect.
Heard of it. Sounds good.
Apparently, he was very important, though, because he was chosen to be one of 3 flag bearers from Ulm who took part in the Nazis. It's Reich, right? Like when you say the Third Reich.
Spell it.
R-E-I-C-H. I think it's Reich and not Rake.
Reich? I don't know.
Anyway, their third... Yeah, the party rally for freedom in September of 1935. In 1937, he volunteered for the labor service, but was discharged in 1939 to attend medical school at the University of Munich. So, important note here. September 1st, 1939, Hitler invaded Poland. 2 days later, France and Britain declared war on Germany. Just to keep all this in context.
Okay.
So while attending university, Hans met professors and students who were very critical of the Nazis, as you fucking should be, and they forced him to question his own position more critically. He formed a tight friend group composed of Christopher Probst, Alexander Schmorl, and Willy Graf.
So are you about to tell me that he grew up with parents who resisted Hitler? He went against his parents, got this high-end position, and now he's going to turn against Hitler? Is that what you're about to tell me?
Yeah. Okay. And he's, yeah. So during a semester break, he and his friends were actually drafted as medics, and they were sent to the front lines of, I believe, the French... What is the word? The French war, like the front lines with France, whatever. And what they experienced changed their views forever. So they witnessed the violence and crimes that were committed by Germany. They saw Jewish civilians being gunned down, murdered, and raped by SS soldiers and the mass graves that they were buried in. And so then they were like, ew. Yeah.
Maybe we don't want to follow this guy.
Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, it took him some time, but at least he got there.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember, like, if you grow up and you see this guy on TV who's like, I'm going to change the world, and all your friends are like, yeah, that's cool. Like, peer pressure is going to get you, and you're just going to follow the masses, and you're going to be like, yeah, that's cool. I mean, look at Donald
Trump.
And
Hitler was charismatic.
He was, yeah.
This is why you can't trust a charismatic person.
Yeah, fuck all politicians.
Wow, politicians are just fucking corrupt.
They're psychopaths. Now on to Sophie. So Sophie Scholl was born on May 9th, 1921, and she was the fourth Shull child.
Okay.
When she was 12 years old, she joined Bund Duchester Medell, whatever, also known as the League of German Girls.
Okay.
And in 1937, Sophie witnessed several of her siblings and friends get arrested for being members of non-Nazi youth groups. And this was a turning point in her life and her ideals. So you have to remember, it's also illegal at this time to have groups that aren't, that don't support Nazis.
Wow. Who would have thought?
I can't remember the exact names of some of the groups, but some of the groups would, like, take in Jewish kids, because, you know, this is before where they were sending all them to concentration camps, and they would, like, protect them, because, you know, Hitler had a speech that's, like, what is it? It's, like, trust no man.
What?
Yeah, he has a quote that's, like, trust... Hold on, let me see. Oh, wow. The FBI is really gonna be on me. Hitler quotes about Jews.
You just, like, right at the end of it, I hate Hitler, please don't arrest me.
Yeah. Well, here's one. The ultimate goal must be to remove Jewish people. Anyway, yeah, he has one that's really famous, like, when he first was getting, like, inducted.
Wasn't he also Jewish?
I actually don't know that, but I do find it funny that he's, like, the Aryan race is who we need, and then you look at him and you're like, bro, you're a brunette with brown eyes.
Yeah.
You, okay.
But also, not really, because, you know, blue eyes are cute and all, but we can't fucking see.
I
don't get it.
What? Anyway, yeah, he's stupid.
I don't know where he got that, like.
The Aryan race.
Because it was just different from him, and he wanted to, I don't know.
Well, there's, like, a lot of cults that are about, like, the Aryan race is, like, the supreme race and beliefs and books.
But that's, like, isn't that derivative of Hitler's teachings, though? Like, all of them, aren't they derivative?
No, the Aryan thing was before Hitler. And then he was like, yeah, I love it. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Well, maybe don't.
Yeah. Maybe don't kill millions of people.
There's an idea. Maybe with all your experiments, you could have invented colored contacts.
What fucking idiots. So it moved her from being a proud supporter of the Nazis to an active resistance fighter.
Good for her.
Bad bitch. So she graduated high school in the spring of 1940 and started an apprenticeship to become a teacher at the Froebel Institute.
Where she was going to directly teach against Hitler.
Yep.
She's like, nope, divert it.
Yeah. However, in 1941, the Nazis had this program that you had to serve, once you hit 18, you had to serve a year of, like, the war service, essentially. And so she was conscripted to the auxiliary war service.
Really?
Yeah, crazy. So she is said to have disliked this, and that's when she really started to become a resistance fighter again.
Well, yeah, most people don't like being told they have to fight a war.
Yeah, it's crazy. Following her service, she enrolled in the University of Munich, where her brother Hans was.
Okay.
So Hans, cute. Hans introduced her to his friends, and she quickly became a key member of their friend group. The siblings confided in each other about their hatred for the Nazi regime, and eventually to their friends and their psychology and philosophy professor, Kurt Huber. Knowing that public dissent was not an option, in June of 1942, the group decided to do something. So they began printing and distributing anonymous leaflets in and around Munich titled The White Rose. The first leaflet contained an essay that said that the Nazi regime had slowly imprisoned the German people and was now destroying them. The Nazis had turned evil, and it was time for Germans to, quote, rise up and resist the tyranny of their own government.
I don't think they turned evil. I think they were evil to begin with.
Yeah, I think that they just ran on a platform of, like, we're going to make things great. And people were like, yeah, make things great. And then they're like, by killing Jews. And people are like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, I don't think that they had any good ideas, but I could see, like, why people would believe it. If you've been poor your whole life and they're like, we're going to change things. And you're like, yeah. And then all of a sudden you're putting people in concentration camps. Yeah, that's evil.
Well, no, they don't have good ideas at all. But I mean, like, we still do dumb shit like this and people are like, yeah, this race is the reason why we're not doing what we should do. No, wrong.
Yeah, I mean, poor people thought Donald Trump was going to make them rich, and they're still poor, so.
Where? How? When?
I know, that's why I'm saying, how?
Is he going to pour his money into you?
His daddy's loans? Maybe.
Yeah.
And at the bottom of the essay, they ask that the public make as many copies of the leaflets as possible and to distribute them. And another important thing here is that ink and paper are being rationed at this time.
Of course they are, because you have to control the media to control everybody else. Look at China.
Exactly. So the leaflet caused a tremendous stir among all the citizens in Munich. This was the first time the internal dissent against the Nazis had surfaced within Germany.
And everybody was probably like, oh shit, yeah, someone's saying what I'm thinking.
Oh no. And in the beginning, the group mailed thousands of these pamphlets to random people that they found in the phone book. They took them in suitcases to other cities and just dumped them in phone booths. And they sent the leaflets to authors, booksellers, professors, basically anyone that could make a change.
Yeah.
And just weeks after the first one, a second was distributed. This one questioned why the Germans were responding to the atrocities of the Nazi regime the way they were. Quote, why do German people behave so apathetically in the face of these abominable crimes, crimes so unworthy of the human race? Hardly anyone thinks about that. It is accepted as fact and put out of mind. The German people slumber on in their dull, stupid sleep and encourage these fascist criminals, end quote.
Well, they don't care as long as it's not happening to them.
Yep.
And it can be as atrocious as possible as long as it's not coming to their doorstep.
Yeah, it doesn't directly affect them. So the leaflet goes on to say, for his apathetic behavior, he gives these evil men the opportunity to act as they do. He tolerates this government, which has taken upon itself such an infinitely great burden of guilt. Indeed, he himself is to blame for the fact that it came about at all. End quote. So they're just fucking saying this shit. And remember, they're like in their 20s right now. Going against this powerful, strong regime. So the members of the White Rose advocated for the overthrow of Hitler and the Nazis, not through violence, but through sabotage. And in some of their pamphlets, they described how to do this. So, quote, sabotage in armament plants and war industries. Sabotage at all gatherings, rallies, public ceremonies, and organizations of the National Socialist Party. Obstruction of the smooth functioning of the war machine. End quote.
Okay. I mean, that's an idea.
Yeah. They also painted graffiti on the walls of the university with slogans like freedom, Hitler the mass murderer, and down with Hitler.
Wow, that's so accurate.
Their work quickly spread to other cities, and some of its literature even showed up in Austria. Can you hear the AC right now?
No.
Okay, hopefully.
I don't think so.
Hopefully it won't get picked up. So Sophie played a key role in the group's resistance because, as a woman, she was much less likely to be stopped and searched by the SS than her male members. So she did a lot of the taking the drafts to go get printed, taking them to distribute them because, I mean, they're sexist and they don't think women can do anything, so.
Oh, yeah, okay. So then they just thought women are just fucking stupid. There's no way
that they would help.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And, good job, idiots.
Yeah. In the end, they published six leaflets from 1942 to 1943, interrupted briefly when Hans and his friends were once again sent to the front lines, the Eastern Front, to be exact. And I don't know if you know anything about the Eastern Front, but it was the biggest war casualty, like the biggest war fought during World War II. I think it was like, I want to say 30 million people alone on the Eastern Front. It was like 60% of the German forces died during the Eastern Front.
Oh, wow.
So it's big fucking deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So their message of dissent reached thousands of households throughout Germany and inspired many.
Whoop, whoop.
I know, right? But their luck ran out.
Oh, no. I don't like these kind of stories.
Yeah, I know.
We can stop here.
You feel great, and you're like, yay! So on February 18th of 1943, Hans and Sophie arrived at the University of Munich with a suitcase full of the White Rose's sixth and final leaflet.
Uh-oh.
It read, quote, "Even the most dull-witted German has had his eyes opened by the terrible bloodbath which, in the name of freedom and honor of the great German nation, they have unleashed upon Europe and unleash anew each day. The German name will forever be tarnished unless finally the German youth stands up, pursues both revenge and atonement, smites our tormentors, and founds a new intellectual Europe. Students, the German people look to us. The responsibility is ours. Just as the power of the spirit broke the Napoleonic terror of 1813, so too will it break the terror of the National Socialist in 1943. Gives me chills.
That's just interesting that they're educating the youth.
Yeah, yeah. So they're calling on people like them, the young people who historically have always made changes in countries.
Yeah.
So the duo were dropping pamphlets in the hallways, classrooms. They were basically stuffing them in every single crook and nanny to get it out to as many people as possible. And Sophie actually went up to the main hall and flung a stack into the air.
I'm sorry. Stop.
What?
You said crook and nanny, and my brain stopped on
crook
that.
Crook and
nook cranny? And cranny.
Oh, whoops. Okay, I'll just restart.
It took me so long. No, keep it. It just took me cranny. So long. My brain was like, that's not right.
But okay, so she went up to the main hall and flung a stack of papers off. Basically, it's like the lower levels.
Yeah.
Which is famous in movies, by the way, when you watch movies about this. And this move is actually seen by a man named Jacob Schmid, who worked as a janitor and was a member of the Nazi party.
Oh, sir!
He quickly told the police what he saw, and the siblings were arrested almost immediately. They were searched, and Hans was found with the draft for the seventh leaflet within his pocket. They matched the writing of the seventh leaflet to a letter in Scholl's room that had been signed by White Rose member Christopher Probst, and Christopher was arrested as well. They spent about 3 hours being interrogated, and they were all three charged with treason.
That's a big charge.
Yep.
I mean, technically it's kind of true, but like...
It's a fake guy. Like, yeah, we don't believe in this government, yeah. So... on February 22nd, 1943, just 4 days after being arrested, the trial of the three began.
Oh, boy.
No witnesses were called. The group was not allowed to give testimony to defend themselves. And they were not allowed to pick their defenders.
No. So you just picked Nazi defenders is what you did. Okay, that's bullshit. And let me guess. Okay, this is a fucking witch trial all over again. Or... Wait, when were the witch trials? 1940s? So it's about the same time.
We're 1940s? Oh my god. I don't think it was 19. I think it was like 1840s.
Probably 1700s. Hang
on. Far away.
We gotta start. Wait. If it's around the same time, I'm saying Hitler created them.
It's definitely not.
1692, so I was close. So Hitler created the Salem witch trials.
It's a conspiracy. We start it. So Sophie, Hans, and Christoph attempted to take full blame for the White Rose's actions, and they refused to give up their co-conspirators.
Good.
The only statement on record belongs to Sophie, and she said, quote, "Somebody, after all, had to make a start. What we wrote and said is believed by many. The others just don't dare to express themselves as we did. You know the war is lost. Why don't you have the courage to face it?" End quote. Bad bitch. 21. So Robert.
Was she?
She was 21, yep.
Oh my god.
Robert Freisler, the judge, found all three defendants guilty of treason.
Shocker. Yep,
and sentenced them to death by guillotine, which was to take place immediately that day.
Ugh. Ugh.
Hans and Sophie were permitted to have one last meeting with their parents. And during the meeting, Sophie told her parents, quote, "We took everything upon us. What we did will cause waves," end quote.
And it did.
It did. No relative came to visit Christoph. His wife, who had just had their third baby and was still in the hospital, had no idea that he was even on trial or had been sentenced to death.
Oh my God.
So on February 22nd of 1943, Hans, Sophie, and Christoph were beheaded. Hans' final words are said to have been, "Long live freedom." Hans was 24 years old, Sophie was 21, and Christoph was 23.
Jesus, they're so young.
I know, makes you want to cry. Unfortunately, they were not the last to die. So shortly after the trial, the Nazis investigated and tracked down Alex Schmorl, who was 25, Willy Graf, who was 25 as well, and Kurt Huber, the teacher, who was 49, and executed all three of them. Other students who were linked to the White Rose Group by either participating or distributing were also executed or sent away to concentration camps.
Ooh, wow. I mean, like, there's a fucking...
Yep.
I mean, that just tells you, like, they're getting rid of everything that is not supporting them.
And how...
That's a red flag.
How scared of you of 20-year-olds that you have to behead them? Like...
Yeah. I don't know. 20-year-olds are scary.
Yeah. They can cause waves, just like Sophie said. And after their deaths, a copy of the sixth pamphlet was smuggled out of Germany and delivered to the Allies.
Nice.
This leaflet was retitled The Manifesto of the Students of Munich, and the Allied forces dropped millions of copies in Germany.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Unfortunately, instead of just, like, they killed them instead of taking them and, like, hiding them away... Mm-hmm. So it just kind of made their cause that much more relevant.
Yeah, they became martyrs.
And now people are really going to talk about it because you murdered all these people. Why? You're saying treason.
Dissent, yeah.
And then everyone's going to start questioning, oh, well, what did they do?
Yep, just because they didn't believe in the way that they were supposed to.
Yep.
So after the war... Verdicts like these were overturned, and Germany, along with the rest of the world, now view the members of the White Rose to be the heroes that they are. The Central Hall of Munich University has been renamed, after Hans and Sophie. The square opposite of it has been renamed to Professor Huber Platz, in dedication to the professor. Two large fountains located in front of the university are also dedicated to Hans and Sophie, and there's one straight across the street that is also dedicated to the professor. Many schools, streets, and other places all over Germany are now named in all the members of the White Rose, and Alexander Schmorell, who was of Russian descent, was glorified as a saint and a passion bearer by the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia in Munich, Germany on February 5th, 2012.
Nice. Dang, that took a long time.
So the White Rose Resistance Group was active from 1942 to 1943, but the courage and its convictions have left a long-lasting mark on history. Quote, "We will not be silent," the group wrote in its fourth leaflet. "We are your bad conscience. The White Rose will not leave you in peace." And that is the story of the White Rose Resistance Group.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like
it. There's not really much that you can, like, joke around with on that one. Because it's about Nazis.
Yeah. Fuck Hitler. Fuck Hitler, Nazis.
But yeah, I really liked them. I listened to them the first time, I cried. So I was like, I gotta do it.
No, I never heard of them before, so that's nice.
Yeah, real fucking heroes that you don't learn about in school.
Yeah.
Instead we learn about, like, fucking Confederate soldiers and shit. Robert Lee.
Who the fuck is that?
Isn't that the Confederate general?
I don't know.
Who also, by the way, saw the flag as a point of treason in the United States and was not buried in either his Confederate uniform or the flag because it was treason against the United States.
All right, so which side was he on?
Confederate.
So, like, explain it in simple terms.
Confederate commander loses war, refuses to bear anything that marks the Confederacy. So okay. He was like, we are part of the United States. Wearing that as a sign of treason, we're not going to wear it. Or fly it, for that matter.
So he was like denouncing
what they
command,
did, yeah.
I guess. Okay.
Yeah, after
lost. That's pretty good.
Anyway, what do
now
I know?
I'm following. Well, yesterday was Juneteenth.
It was. Woo woo.
Do you actually... So for a long time, I didn't know what that was about. And by a long time, I mean about a year. Just because we were in COVID and I was like, okay, a holiday. I'm still at home. I looked it up, though.
Yep.
Congratulations, Texas, for getting your head out of your ass.
2 years after they signed the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah. Of course it's Texas, though.
Texas.
Texas. Anyway, that's it. That's all I got.
That's it for your story?
No, I'm just kidding.
That's like, oh, short episode. Like,
would you be mad?
No, I'd just be like, okay. It's a short.
No, I covered the Buddha-filled cult, which in the beginning it was just a religious group.
What?
It's technically considered a cult now, though.
Yeah, I think most religions are cults, but hey.
I mean, like, they walk a fine line. It just depends.
Yeah. I don't think I know one church that's not a cult, though.
So, this group began in the 1980s in Hollywood, California.
Hollywood.
The founder's original name that he was born with is Jaime Gomez. Which, if you look that up, make sure you look up the right one, because apparently there's another actor named Jaime Gomez. This is not the same guy.
Well, horrible name. No wonder he changed it.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's Venezuelan, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't he an immigrant?
Yeah. He's got a thick accent, too. It was really hard to like, understand what he was saying. But he also doesn't... He's an odd guy, just in general.
Yes, he's very odd.
Yeah.
I can't wait till you talk about the fruit salads.
Oh, my God. I'm not talking about them. I'm not. If you dedicate that much time to fruit salad, no.
Yep.
That guy, I feel bad for that guy, though.
Yeah, it's so sad.
Because he wasn't even, like, he would spend all of this time creating this, like, work of art for this guy.
Out of fruit.
Yeah. And then they would just put him in a blender.
Yep. Control, man.
He asked you if he could do anything for you. You told him to make fruit salads. If you're not going to eat them, why? Why make him make them? And you saw how much effort he put into it.
Yeah.
God damn, a fruit salad.
You're heated already.
I mean, I probably wouldn't eat them just because, like, he, like, carved them.
Yeah, I'd want to just look at them.
I'd still eat it, though.
I'd take little chunks.
The founder renamed himself to Michelle, and this was a name when he founded the group. Later, he would change it to Andreas, and then again to Reiji.
Ugh, just pick one.
Yeah, well, he can't. Mm-hmm. People referred to him as the master or the teacher.
No.
Yeah, not me.
If I join a group and I have to call someone the master, I'm out.
I don't think they had to, but they wanted to.
Okay, if I'm in a group.
Was oddly charismatic. Like,
yeah.
Especially in his younger years.
And he was hot.
Look bad. Yeah.
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 But if I'm in a group and one of my group members calls the leader master and the group leader doesn't say, what the fuck? I'm probably going to leave the group.
Oh, yeah. You probably should. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. But he also referred to himself as the master. Or, like, he would say things about the master and then wouldn't necessarily say that it was him.
Yeah.
But would, like, allude to it.
I hate him.
Okay, so he used to be an actor prior to this group. He once was a background person in Rosemary's Baby, where he creepily looked at the camera like he usually does.
Did you find it?
They showed it in the documentary, the Holy Hell documentary. They show it.
Mm.
Yeah. It was like 3 seconds long. And he just stares at the camera.
Gotta get those 3 seconds of fame.
Yep. And he was also featured in porn videos.
Nice.
And they showed some of those. They like blurred out certain parts, but they showed like three of those. Scenes from his porn videos, and I was like, you're so fucking aggressive, like, stop.
Are you gonna link this? Are we gonna link this?
They were aggressive. It's in the video in the Holy Hell documentary. I mean, I'm sure I can find them, but I'm not gonna search on my computer.
Well, I mean, I searched famous Hitler quotes, so.
Yeah, I just don't want like a virus on my computer. I'll do it on my phone because there's a
private mode. Yeah.
And then I'll just link them to you. I don't think you want to watch them though. They're aggressive.
Yeah, probably not. I'll watch the Holy Hell documentary.
Like, you need to give some passion, not just aggression. Okay.
Sensual feelings, God.
He also took ballet, which he was very passionate about. That's where his passion went. And also, he was extremely into fitness.
Yeah, he's hot.
This dude had, like, an 8-pack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, chiseled 8-pack.
I can't say that I wouldn't follow a hot cult leader.
In the beginning, though, because he just seemed like this down-to-earth person who was all about being happy and, like,
loving
not
yourself.
Worrying about the future. Yeah, not worrying about the future and not, like, stressing about the past, but, like, being in the here and now, which is great.
Yeah, I struggle
with
that.
He just seemed open-minded. And, you know, they would sing songs, and they would dance, and they would just be happy, right?
Yeah.
They kind of reminded me of hippies.
Like hot hippies, though.
Yeah, hot
hippies. All
of
them were hot.
There's a ton of people in that group that are fucking good-looking.
I cannot emphasize that enough. They were all hot.
Like, they could all be models.
Yes.
I'm telling you, but... Which is why I'd never be able to get in.
I would never be in that group, so.
But yeah, especially in the beginning. But then when he started doing, like, plastic surgery and aging, oh no.
Yeah, just let it happen.
He enjoyed wearing makeup, and he would constantly walk around in Speedos. And I mean Speedos.
Like tiny?
Oh,
well,
yes.
I guess everyone's seen his thing in his videos, so.
I mean, yeah, because they would go skinny dipping sometimes, too, so.
Oh.
There's, like, some, not all of them, but, like, when they would get in the water and stuff and, like, these retreats that they would go to, some of them, I don't think, had clothes on, but whatever.
Nice.
No, but he definitely had, I don't know if he showed everybody what was happening.
In the
but
below
he,
the belt?
He imprinted for real.
What do you mean? Like
in
his clothes?
Speedo.
Oh.
You could see it.
It was tight.
Oh, it was. It was very tight. But yeah, so this is the person. Used to act. Nobody
ballerina?
Knew about the porn videos until later. Yeah. Took ballet. Was pretty good at it as far as I know. Liked to be fit, liked wearing makeup, walked around in Speedos. There you go.
Liked naked people.
They weren't, like, fully nude, though. They mostly had their clothes on.
Huh.
Which is probably how you'd get me. Yeah. You got your clothes on? Great.
Yeah, I think going back to episode one, I nudist cults, no. No, no.
Yeah, no. He also recruited using yoga. Because they were very into yoga.
You got me?
Yeah.
Hot dudes, yoga, got me.
He used the Bhagavad Gita as a source for his beliefs. And again, he believed that you should worry about only the here and now, and then worry about things that could, or like concern yourself with things that would make you happy. He taught that everyone should drop their own ego, and that they should take their shoes off before entering a room, surrender to the guru, and then just to leave the world behind.
I like the majority of those.
Yeah.
I don't like the surrender to the guru thing, though.
Yeah, I'm not about that, but...
Everything before that sounds great.
But who's the guru?
Him.
Is the question. No, I don't think so.
No, but that's what he teaches, right, though?
Mm-mm.
Is that he doesn't...
Not in the beginning. In the beginning, it was all about bettering yourself and opening your mind and connecting to the world.
But then he flips it and he's the guru, right?
Yeah, eventually he gets paranoid and it's all about him and people serving him and making him happy and doing things for him. And if you're not doing stuff for him or with his permission, then it's a no-go for him. That was in the later years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also would do what he called the cleansing. And it's like this hypnotherapy or psychotherapy sessions that he would make every member do. And every member would do it once or twice a week. But he also made them pay for the sessions.
Oh,
yeah, they had to pay $50 per session. And here's what's fucked up. So it came out much, much later that during these sessions, it was really just a way for him to abuse sexually the male members of this group. And he would, like, coerce them into having sex with him. And if they, like, because, you know, they're, like, he's charismatic and they're listening to him and they think that they need to do this for, like, their soul and everything. But when they would kind of, like, not really buy it and question it and tell him that they didn't want to have sex with him, he would say, well, let's go back to the past and what are you fighting?
Fuck this,
like,
guy.
What are you fighting here? Well, maybe you're dicking my ass. Move. probably cut that out. Probably need to cut that out. Well, it's explicit, so I guess we could keep it in.
But it's just, like, he is the, like, epitome of a predatory rapist.
Yes. So, like, nobody ever said that he raped them, but he did.
He did, yeah.
I mean, nowadays it's considered rape. It is.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he's coercing them.
You can't do that.
So, I mean,
he's in a position of power because, like, these people are following him as, like, he knows everything and is changing their life.
Yeah, and keep that in mind. He made them pay so he could essentially rape them.
Yes.
Every week.
Yeah.
Sometimes twice a week.
Talk about how they can't have sex with each other, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can bring that back. You can bring it up now. Like, his attitude towards sex was, like, very juvenile. Someone said it like that. And, like, when he would talk about sex during these weekly meetings that they would have, he would act like he was a fucking 14-year-old boy. Like, he would pretend to masturbate with, like, a bowl on his lap or something. And he would, like, kind of roll his eyes back. He was just,
like, he was very immature in that area. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, well, I guess he's, like, been in porn videos, so he already has this, like, fake world built up around what sex is.
Yeah, but why do you have to, like, you're experienced enough in sex to, like, not be that immature about
being an adult,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. But, yeah, he told everybody, hang on. I gotta turn my air off. It'll be too loud.
Your hair looks very nice, by the way.
Thanks.
What do you think? Is your work going to say anything?
I shouldn't. Someone's been in there with blue hair before.
Yeah.
Travis has been in there with a blue beard before. And if they say anything, I'm just going to say, okay, give me $600. And then I'm not going to change it. What? I mean, what? There's nothing in the rules that say that I can't have my hair colored.
Yeah, there's nothing.
And
I want to redo my septum, but I'm like, can you say anything about that?
No, like, I don't think they can. I really don't think they can anymore.
You'd hope not.
Especially with girls, I don't think they will.
Yeah.
And
I like your little shadow root part, how it, like, slowly goes in.
Yeah, because it's dark, but it's got, like, a hint of purple.
Yeah. Yeah, we should post it to the Instagram. Kayla's new do.
Yeah, I really like it.
Yeah, it looks good.
I think my favorite part is the shadow root.
Yeah, you definitely look better with darker hair. I like darker
shadows. Yeah, at least
shadows.
On the roots.
Yeah.
I like it.
Me too.
But yeah, we picked the colors so that when they fade, it'll be really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
There's like 4 or 5 different colors in
here. And like if you grow it out, like it's not like your roots aren't going to be like, oh my gosh, she needs to get her hair redone. It's going to be like, oh, just dark roots.
Which is
roots.
Why I go to the same guy because he's so good at this. And then he knows like, I don't like to spend all that extra time on my hair. So, like, mine's just natural. It'll go the way that it goes. I don't, like, style it aside from drying it sometimes.
That's why, people, you gotta find one professional and stick to them. Because they know you.
And if anybody's in the St. Louis area and needs their hair done, reach out. I will give you the best hairstylist in the world. He is so good.
Yeah, Kayla's had all kinds of colors, so.
Okay, where the heck was I now that my ears stopped?
They can't have sex with each other. He is very juvenile thinking.
Okay, yeah, so he would tell the members that he didn't want them to have romantic relationships with each other, and he didn't want them to have sex because he basically told them that it would hinder, like, the cleansing or the healthiness of their soul.
And just mind you, again, these are all very hot people that are being told that they can't have sex with other hot people.
Well, apparently that everybody they didn't listen.
Everybody's banging everybody, but
yeah. In the documentary, somebody was like, yeah, we were told we couldn't have sex. And then on the lowdown, find out everyone's fucking everybody around here.
And he's like, fucking everybody. It sounds not like consenting.
They didn't know that yet, though.
Yeah.
Well, he's not fucking everybody. He's fucking all the guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think there is ever an allegation that he had sex with a girl.
Yeah, it was just the dudes.
Yeah. Shame on you.
Yeah. Yeah, shame on you.
Shame on you for being a fucking predator, sir. And the guys that he was having sex with were heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck are you doing?
He's a monster. Like,
if they want to have sex with you, they'll have sex with you, but they definitely didn't.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys, too, that came out on the video and, like, told of this abuse, they're married now, or they have, like, their girlfriends of however many years. It tells you about, like, their lives now. It's really cute.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, even though this trauma happened to them, like, everyone has, like, moved on and, like, gotten the help that they need, I think, and they're living nice, healthy lives the way that they want to live them. So,
makes me
good
happy.
Part of this. Yeah. He also had this thing that he, like, he would go on these, like, retreats and stuff with them, but at one point, and then eventually later, a second time, he had what he called the knowing, which was a direct connection with God. But not everyone was allowed to have this privilege. You had to basically give up everything in order to get this. And like, I don't know, like, some of the loyal people who had been there for years didn't get the knowing, but, like, some of the new ones did. And I personally think it's whoever he thought he could manipulate the easiest got this.
Of course, yeah.
That's my opinion.
Oh, and isn't this where he would, like, push on their eyes?
No, he does that. That might have just been for the knowing, but yes,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, for the knowing. And they would see, like, the, you know, like, when you push on your eyes, you see the little dots and stuff? Yeah. And he'd be like, that's it.
He didn't push on their eyes, but he did, like, in their temples, he would put his, like, fingers in their thumb. And then in the middle of their forehead, he would push so deep there were indentations, and then he would shake his hands, right?
Yeah.
He would shake and, like, force them backwards and, like, on the ground and stuff. So, yeah, these people said that they saw lights and they could hear sounds and, yeah, your brain is hurting.
Yeah.
Your brain stem is not happy with what's happening here. Because, like, if you come up to me and shake my head like that, which it wasn't, like, shaking. It was, like, just, like, his hands were jerking, right?
Yeah.
And it honestly reminds me of, like, a Pentecostal church.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody's seen that where, like, they speak in tongues and, like, they put their hands on you and then, like, people start shaking violently. That's kind of what he was doing to their faces and they were just kind of sitting there.
No.
But he said that it was a transference of energy from him, from the master, to these people.
Oh, give me a break.
So I don't know if he meant it's from him or if he meant he was channeling God and he was just, like, the conductor.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he meant that he was God.
I mean, he definitely. His new name, Reiji, actually means godlike, so.
There we go. Yep.
Welcome to his mindset. But yeah, that was the knowing. And the people that didn't get it, he told them that it wasn't their time and they weren't ready yet. And that if their souls weren't prepared for it.
And they'd been with him for years and gave him all this money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
but yeah. So in the beginning, too, which I thought was nice, they had their own lives. They had their own bank accounts. They hung out with their family still. They had their own jobs, and their jobs, you know, like, they paid their own rent with the money from their jobs and everything else, like, a standard citizen. And then if the group needed anything or they wanted to build something, then everybody would pitch in. So, like, that was awesome.
Yeah, I could handle that.
Yeah, and then at one point they ended up moving, and we'll get into that, but when they ended up moving, they didn't have jobs anymore, and they isolated themselves. So that's kind of when it started turning.
Cult tactics.
Yep. He also started changing people's names, and he, like, he gave them names. Like, I don't remember what their original names were, but this one girl's name changed to Emiliana. Another one changed to Radia. Yeah.
Wasn't one of them horrible? Like, it was the biblical, like, fat woman?
What do you mean?
There's, like, a woman in the Bible who's known as, like, a slob and fat.
And are you serious?
Yes, and he gave one of the fatter women that name.
He did not like fat people. I think I know who he gave that name to.
Yeah. It was horrible. And
I feel bad for her. But she seems like a smart girl anyway.
Yeah.
So, she fucking hates him. He also, at some point during, like, the next years and, like, after, I think it was after the knowing, he started forcing people to, like, isolate from their families, and he called it detach. So they would call their families or talk to their families and say, we've decided to detach from you.
Wow.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And then one girl, even her father was sick and dying, and he kept forcing her not to see him, so she actually didn't see her father before he died. She said that she would just sob and cry because she would book these plane tickets and then, like, keep crying and eventually cancel them just over and over again.
That's really sad.
She wanted to see her dad, yeah.
He has a very powerful pull on her.
Yeah, she feels fucking awful for it. But, I mean, like,
I would, too.
He had so much power over these people. And they all thought that everything that he said and did was for them.
It's a good cult leader.
Yeah. At some point, and remember, he's still young at this point. Still looks good. I'm serious. People need to look up, or, like, yeah, look at the Instagram, because we'll put a picture, like.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We need to do a before and after, like, beginning of the group and, like, in the later hotties. Years.
Yeah. The hotties and the naughties.
Is that this episode's name?
Hotties versus the naughties.
So the group started gaining the attention of the Cult Awareness Network while they were in Hollywood. And then they eventually relocated. But during this time, he only took, like, a couple of members with him, and for 6 months he was trying to figure out where they were going to relocate to. And during that time, he just left the other members, like, wherever the hell they lived, alone and isolated for 6 months. And they were all just, like, they just didn't know what to do with themselves.
Yeah, where the fuck is our leader?
For 6 months, how long does it take? Yeah. And then he decided to go to Austin, Texas. I don't think it takes 6 months to figure out you want to go to Austin.
I do love Austin.
But, yeah, they relocated to Austin, Texas. And then he eventually, like, had everybody pack up their stuff and in small groups leave and move out. He had, obviously, the passion for ballet, and he ended up making it a big part of the group. Of course, fitness as well, because, you know, he had this thing about fat people.
Mm-hmm.
And when he moved to Austin, he recruited more people, and all of the people were even hotter than the first people. They made it a point to tell you everybody he recruited in Austin were all hot.
I don't know how that's possible. They were really good looking before.
Yeah. Especially Sophia.
They were all hot. Did you ever see her? No. Especially the dudes. He knew what he was doing. Because if there's a group of hot dudes and they're like, hey, you want to talk about this organization? I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of remind me of, like, down to earth, kind of tanned, almost surferish dudes.
Yeah.
Because they had like the dirty blonde hair.
And they're so naive.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, honey.
And they were all so nice.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone in this cult was nice except for him.
Well, yeah.
The main
and
guy.
And they all formed this giant bond. Like, they were like a family. So, I mean, if you remember when we were in the military, like, you got close to people, obviously. And then, you know, when you were with them for a certain amount of time, like, when you guys left to go home and, like, go back to reality, it was bittersweet. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I remember after deployment, when I was on deployment, I was never in the bathroom alone. Like, there's always someone in the bathroom.
And then when you go home, you're like, it's fucking quiet.
For the first time, you're, like, in the bathroom alone, you're like, what the heck?
Yeah, like, it's peaceful, but also, like, it makes you miss
it's the sad, other people. Yeah. Yeah. You're just kind of like, dang.
Yeah, that was, like, the worst part. But these guys have been together for, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
So just imagine that. I would not be able to leave them. I'm sorry.
I wouldn't, like, yeah, I wouldn't either.
No matter how crazy he was, I don't think I could leave the people that I formed a bond with.
And isn't that what they all said? Like, I stayed for this person and this person. Like, I thought that's what the members said.
I think when everyone, some people did that. And then when everyone started leaving, a lot of people left with them because they didn't want to see those people go.
Yeah. They left in, like, groups.
It's, like, a 50-50. Like, some people stayed a little bit for other people, and then also some people left for other people. Because, like, they're family.
Yeah.
They think of each other as brothers and sisters, except for the ones who are fucking. Let's just be clear. Okay, so then he recruited when he went to Texas, and then started making ballet a large part of the group. And he would make the members attend hours worth of ballet training and choreography.
Ugh.
Wikipedia said it was 2 to 3 times a week for 3 to 5 hours.
Holy shit, that's a lot.
Yep. Eventually, he started making musicals and theater productions, and the members would practice for an entire year for this performance, and they would only perform once and only for the group. Nobody outside would see it. And he would, like, fly in cloth and stuff so they could make their costumes.
So he was spending tons of money on makeup.
He was spending money. I don't know whose money.
Their money.
Yeah. And then, yeah, even there was one member who found this plot of land. And he told him to buy it because he wanted to build a theater on it. So a member bought the leader a plot of land with his own money and then built the theater for him. I don't know if everybody chipped in for the theater or if this guy did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, he said that as he would build it, like, they would build and they would get up a wall and everything. And then the leader would come out and he'd go, I don't fucking like these windows over here. Redo it. So then they would unbuild it. And then he would get pissed off that it was taking too long. And then he would just, like, flip back and forth, like, oh, it's fine. It doesn't matter how long it takes as long as it's right. And then he would be like, why the fuck isn't this done?
What a little poop head.
Yeah, he started, like, flipping his personality. And so that theater is still there. And it's now called the One World Theater in Texas.
I like the name.
They don't say that they have any association.
Yeah, of course not. Cult.
Yeah. He would also tell other members to get plastic surgery done in certain areas. And then he also apparently got plastic surgery, which, judging from, like, how he looked later, I can definitely see that.
Yes, yeah.
Like, he looked like he just kept getting, like, his nose done and a bunch of other stuff. Like,
you can kind of tell, like, when people get a lot in the face, it just doesn't look natural after a certain point.
Yeah, because, like, his body is aging, but, like, his face isn't.
Looks like a 12-year-old,
yeah. Yeah, like, the skin is aging, but everything else just looks young.
Plump.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. And then one member said that he actually told other people to get plastic surgery, one, because he wanted them to be pretty, but also because he wanted to get the plastic surgery done and he wanted to see if it was safe.
Oh, yeah, I remember that too.
So he used them as guinea pigs, allegedly.
Yeah.
Okay, so going along with his attitude towards sex, of course he didn't want them in romantic relationships, but he knew that they were, and I don't know, like, how he dealt with that or anything, but at one point, one of the members had a relationship with another member in the group, and I guess it was just, like, a known thing, and then she actually got pregnant, and he told her to have an abortion. And she did.
Ah.
And then I don't know if it was twice that he's done this or if it was the same time, but he actually went to her, the person she was in a relationship with, and said, you need to tell her to have an abortion and you need to make this happen, because if you don't, then you're going to be out of the group.
Oh, yeah, he hated kids, didn't he? I think he, like, hated kids.
Yeah, there were no kids in the group.
Same, but... You can't force someone to have an abortion.
I'm not going to go tell everybody they need to go kill their kids, though.
Yeah. Yeah, the person should have the right to choose long. Like, it should be their choice, not his choice. And you shouldn't hold the group over their heads.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not. So, I don't know if he made her get an abortion twice or if it was the same incident. And he just, like, doubled down.
Yeah.
And basically forced her. He even made one member tell everyone, including her friends and her family members and everyone in the group, that she had cancer, even though she didn't, so that he could heal her of this cancer. The group was, like, enraged when they found this out.
Yeah, I would be too. Fucking lied.
Yeah. When members would confront him or try to leave the group, he would deny any allegations, and then he would demonize the members that left, saying, oh, well, she's just a prostitute, or she has, like, a ring of prostitutes, and, like, she doesn't need to be part of this group because she's a sinner, or whatever.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, people would believe him.
Yeah. What, he's not supposed to be lying to them, and he's
supposedly
doing everything for the good of the group.
He eventually started telling people that if they left the group, they would die within a year because... he was protecting them from a tragic death.
What?
He told one guy that if he wasn't with the group, that he would be diagnosed with AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
He told another guy that he was supposed to die tragically in the next year, and then, like, did some weird ceremony, like, during the knowing, and really, like, took him under his wing, in air quotes.
He's a true cult leader.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He also told some other member that she would die within a year if she left. And at one point she was like, well, if I'm dead within a year, then I'm dead, but I can't stay here anymore.
Yeah.
And then she left.
And didn't die. Isn't that wild?
Amazing.
God's plan.
Hmm. So in 2007, when most of the members turned against him, and left the group, he relocated again for a second time in Hawaii with a few loyal members, which is where they are now. But, okay, so it's important to note, like, so he left Hollywood with his group, changed his name when he went to Texas to Andreas.
Uh-huh.
And then he started becoming paranoid. Like, he thought the FBI would look into them, and they started having, in their weekly meetings, they started doing skits and, like, what to do if the FBI questioned you, and, like, how you were supposed to say you didn't know anybody named Andreas, and a bunch of stuff like that. Yeah, he got paranoid. And then when Waco happened, he was afraid that people would draw parallels to him in Waco.
Yeah.
And he became paranoid.
Hmm.
And that's when stuff started turning.
I mean, Waco was scary as fuck if you're a cult leader.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, fuck.
But when he moved in 2007 to Hawaii and took a few loyal members with him, he also recruited again. And I think he has a new group with maybe 100 followers, maybe more. And then he changed his name to Reiji, which means godlike. And I think they're still active.
Yeah, they are, yeah. So people are still following this motherfucker.
Yeah, but they're new people and they don't know.
Even after all of his...
And he left with some loyal followers, so, like, some of these people know about these sex abuse allegations and the fact that he lied. Yeah, the fact that he lied about curing cancer and the knowing and everything else. Like, they are well aware of what's happening, and the people that they have been close to for 20-something years have been telling them, like, yeah, this happened to me, and this happened to me, and this happened to me. And they're just like, we're going to go to Hawaii. So those people, some of those people stayed.
They're so brainwashed.
And now they are, absolutely, because of those hypnotherapy sessions.
Makes me really sad.
But yeah, and now he has a new group of followers, and these followers don't know anything, and they just look at the loyal people that are with him, and they're like, oh yeah, these guys have been with him for 20-something years. Like, look at them. They're good.
It's great. They're flourishing. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. And that is the Buddha-filled cult. Slash religious group.
Definitely a cult.
Definitely a cult.
Yeah.
In their later years.
No way around that.
Yeah. In their later years, definitely. But if anyone's interested, and it is a good documentary, it's like an hour and a half long on Amazon Prime, and it's free. It's called Holy Hell.
Holy Hell.
And I like it because the guy that was around him and closer to him the longest is the one that put all this footage together, and he was the documentary person for the group. So there's over 20 years of actual footage of the group that he pieces together, and he gives you a timeline, and he interviews some of the members that left. And so it's just like this documentary narrative of what happened and how it started out and what people were feeling and how great it was and then how bad it was.
Yeah.
And then he goes in to tell you, like, he'll show you, like, stills of, or, like, these videos of the people that were part of the group, and he'll tell you who stayed and who left, which is nice. And
yeah.
Then he tells you about a lot of the people who were in the interviews. He'll tell you where they are now, or in 2016, where they were, because that's when it came out, where they are now and who they're with and what they're doing and how their life is going and their jobs. Aww. Yep, and
yeah,
that's at the end. So, yeah, it's a Sundance. And then I realized that Jared Leto is executive producer on the movie.
I can't decide if I like him.
Isn't that weird, though? Like,
it is weird, yeah.
I like him, but...
I like 30 Seconds to Mars.
I think he looks pretty good, so...
I think he looks a little rough.
He might look rough now.
He did really, really bad as the Joker.
I don't know. I don't know if I 100% agree with that. Like, I think he did really well for the role he was given.
Oh, I think he did bad. And, like,
I think it's the writers.
And he is a method actor. So he was just doing, like, all sorts of gross shit on
set. Oh, my God.
Set.
Is he really?
Yeah, I was like, that's disgusting. Like, sending, I believe, like, fellow actors and actresses, like, dead rats and stuff. Because that's what the Joker would do. And I'm like, no.
Okay, but let's keep in mind, who was the other method actor that was really
fucking
good?
Heath Ledger, who died.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Shia LaBeouf is also a method actor.
I like him.
I like him. He's hot as hell, too.
There was a movie that Shia LaBeouf was in called Budapest, I think.
Never watched it.
Or Bucharest. I don't know. One of the two.
Yeah.
It's odd. It's like... I think it's like an indie film.
I love indie films.
It's weird and moody, and I like it.
Have you watched Peanut Butter Falcon with him in it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. Oh, no, you gotta watch that. You'll cry.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, I think Jared Leto's pretty fucking hot.
No.
What do you mean, no?
He's not. I think he did amazing as a singer of 30 Seconds to Mars, so everything else, I'm like, nah. Oh, wait, he did do really good in that one HBO film that just came out.
He reminds me of, who's the one that plays, you know what, hang on. Tom Hiddleston.
He reminds
plays
me
Loki.
Of him?
Yeah, when he was
oh,
in his,
yeah,
like,
I guess they do, yeah. Kinda. I mean, Tom's way hotter than Jared, but.
Agreed.
But before we get on to any more tangents, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode.
Yep. Enjoy your cult / religious groups / groups that hate Nazis.
Yeah. And we'll be back next week with a brand new episode.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.